to Geek Orthodox. I'm Father Justin, geek from my youth. My site tagline for Geek Orthodox is, "The geeks have inherited the earth." This is, of course, only partially tongue-in-cheek, because the geek subculture that I grew up in and that has shaped me really has shaped the world in which we live. And I can't think of any aspect of the world in which we live that has been more directly shaped by the geek aspects of the subculture that I grew up in than the world of code in which we now live. Now, by the world of code, of course, I do not mean the Matrix. It's another interesting idea to geek out about. I think it's a kind of silly one, the idea that we live in some sort of simulation. No, rather, I mean something far more mundane. That is to say, everywhere you look in our society, there are computer chips, computer systems, and computer code programs running the systems and the chips that, you know, are all over the place in the world in which we live. And this was not always the case. When I was growing up, a light switch was just a light switch. It was a mechanical device that either opened or closed a switch. Nowadays, it may be, or there may be a computer chip behind it. A thermostat, when I was growing up, was just this dial that you adjusted. Nowadays, even if you have one of those old-fashioned dials that you adjust, it may have a computer chip behind it, or if it doesn't, probably the place where you work has a computer chip that controls the air conditioning or HVAC system that literally conditions the air that you breathe. And of course, you know, even when I was growing up, the banking system was already starting to be computerized. That made a lot of sense. Computers are good at counting, so you might want to apply them to accounting. The internet didn't exist when I was a kid. Most knowledge was from books. Nowadays, that's our go-to. And of course, our primary access to the internet is now through the smartphone that you have in your pocket, which is, of course, itself a computer running on code. So code has shaped the world that we live in. And what I want to do in this episode is talk a little bit about that to kind of set the scene for, I hope, some more reflections on it. And in particular, to enter into this world of code with, well, by sharing my entry into the world of code, which was my TRS-80 color computer. Now, my natural tendency at this point is to geek out about the TRS-80 color computer, how it had 16 kilobytes of RAM, and could display 9 colors if you included black, and so on and so forth. But what I want to do, besides just turning it on and showing you just how quick and wonderfully easy it was to turn on, you had to wait for the CRT to warm up, to turn on this computer system and to get into computing. What I want to do is take the very basic interface. So I'm going to turn it on now, press the button at the back, and there it is. It's that fast. The entire system that it runs on is embedded in a chip inside the computer. But the system is very basic, pun intended. It's extended color basic, to be precise, on this one. We upgraded it to extended color basic, and it now has 64 kilobytes of RAM. I just wanted to show that as the starting point, because computing has gotten a lot more complicated since. And I think it's helpful, if we're going to understand how computers work and think, to start with something that is simple. So, let's start for a second, or stop for a second, and think about the word I just used, think. We tend to anthropomorphize computers. And I don't want to knock that unnecessarily. I think as human beings, that's largely how we understand things. We understand things empathetically. That's why we anthropomorphize the animals. That's why we see similarities, and those similarities are what allows us to connect with things. That being said, the The value of anthropomorphization really comes when we start to think about not simply the similarities, but also the differences. And so I want to, on the one hand, say, yeah, of course, computers, if we want to understand computers in the world of code, we need to know how computers think. But then I have to stop and say, wait a sec, computers don't actually think, at least not the way we think they think, or what we think, not the way we think of thinking. Rather, computers, well, compute. They do operations. And the best way to understand that is to dive in a little bit into the way that computers are programmed, are coded to do what we want them to do. Now, I'm not intending here to make everybody here a computer programming expert. If we want to take a look at this. However, I do think it's valuable to look at this in a fairly simple way. And so I want to give some, to go through how computers think using the, well, my entry point into how computers think, the basic programming languages. Basic is what was ubiquitous on the early computer systems that I grew up with. It was made by this little company called Microsoft, in most of the computers, and it stood for Beginner's All-Purpose Symbolic Instruction Code. It was a programming language deliberately created for beginning programmers to introduce them into the world of programming. So it's something that's, I think, valuable to start with. When we turned on our computers back in the early days, when things were simpler, what we were presented with was a screen like this. It would be have some text on it. It would have a cursor, in my case, a color cycling cursor. And then, in order to make the computer do anything, you actually had to know some basic commands. So, if I just type, for example, "Hello, computer." The computer does not understand that. It gives me a cryptic error, in this case, a syntax error, and it just, okay, it says, okay, I'm ready for you to tell me something that I actually understand. So let's give it something that it actually understands. So I'm going to use a command. Now, when we talk about commands, it's valuable again to think about how we are thinking about computers. We are giving it a command, an instruction. And in this anthropomorphic understanding of computers, the computer then obeys the instruction, or maybe more accurately, executes the operation that we ask it, have asked it to undertake. In this case, the command that I want to use is the print command. So if I tell the computer to print something, it will print it to the screen. Now I need to tell it what to print. So I put in quotes what I want it to print. This is, of course, derived from our usual human text conventions, which when we are saying something in a book, we put it in quotes, or indicating in a book that somebody is saying something, we put it in quotes. So here I've got my first command, print quote, "Hello, computer," unquote. And when I press enter or return, it actually prints out to the screen, "Hello, computer." Now, this is a command, it's not a program. A program is a sequence of commands. That is to say, when we when we program a computer, we give it a bunch of commands to execute in sequence, to obey, if you will, in sequence. Do this, and then do this, and then do this, and then do this. That's a program. So, in the early days of computing, when we didn't have a lot of fancy editing software, we would have to tell the computer to store it in its memory. Here is another aspect of computing that we take from our understanding of what it means to think or to do things, which is the notion of memory. The idea that we want the computer to remember something. In this case, we're going to tell it to remember a sequence of commands. So our first command that we want to store in the memory, we're going to add a line number. Now, nowadays, you don't need line numbers to program computers. Back then, we used line numbers to tell it what the sequence was. And if we wanted, we usually started with line number 10 because invariably you would want to add something before line 10. And so you could add a line 9 or a line 8, and that would be earlier in the sequence. So here, now I'm going to take my command, print hello computer, and nothing happens. Or rather, it looks like nothing happens. What we've actually done is we've stored this command in the memory. So if I list this, there's my program. Now, the program is not exactly a program. It's really just a single command. A program is a sequence here, like you would if I want to program an event. You do this and do this, and now we're going to do this. So we need another command to make a program. So let's add another command. This is the classic go-to command in BASIC. Now that we have line numbers, we can actually tell the computer to go to another line. So actually, before I do this, let's type run to execute the program that is currently in memory. So it just now runs, and it tells us hello computer, and then waits for us to do some more. So we've told the computer to run or to execute the commands that it has in its memory, and it's just done that for us. So now we're going to add another one, the go-to command, and we're going to tell it to go to line 10, and this will actually change the sequence of the program. Because what it will do, or rather, it will introduce a new element into the sequence, which is the loop. So what we've now told it to do is on line 10, print hello computer. Then on line 20, we want it to go back to line 10 and do what's on line 10. So it will then print hello computer, and so on. And so now when we run the program, it will just run forever. This is another aspect of computers, and this is one where computers actually differ from us. As a human being, I would get fairly tired of either typing or saying hello computer over and over and over and over again. Computers, of course, don't get tired. They just do what we tell them to do because that's what they are designed to do. They are actually machines for all our anthropomorphization. And so this computer will simply keep doing this forever for as long as, as long as I let it. So I'm going to break into the code, so stop that there. And what I want to do at this point is just pause for a second and think about what we've just seen. So computers then do what we tell them to. They obey our commands. And they do what we tell them to according to whatever program we set. That is to say, the sequence of commands that we put inside the computer and store in its memory. Computers also remember stuff. They have this ability to do what we tell them to do and to remember what we've told them to do. And then, of course, as we've seen, computers will just keep doing it no matter what, because they're not actually thinking, they're just doing. So now we might want to get a little more complicated. We've changed the sequence of what's happening in the computer's memory, of what we're asking the computer to do with this program. But what if we want to add more things to the sequence, but more importantly, what if we want to actually get it to do something that we want? So rather than say, hello, computer, let's get the computer to ask us, what do you want me to say? And then we'll get the computer to say whatever it is that we want the computer to say. So to do that, I'm going to introduce a number of other commands. The idea here is, of course, not that I'm teaching you all the commands you should learn to program in TRS-80 Color Computer Basic. That would be pretty useless at this point. But rather to think about, okay, well, what else can we get the computer to do? And more importantly, how do we get it to do it? Because all of these basic concepts, the notion of memory, the notion of commands, the notion of execution of commands in sequence in a program. These are common to every aspect of the world of code, every aspect of every device that contains any kind of computer chip in the world in which we live. And this has important implications, which I hope to explore with you, for the world in which we now live. So let's get this program a little more complex. I'm going to, first of all, list my code. Let's add on line 5. We're going to clear the screen. And then on line 7, in case I want to add something between line 5 and line 7. And this line is going to ask for some input. And the command for that is input. And now we want to have some sort of prompt. What do we want? Let's say, what do you want me to say? Note that I'm actually getting anthropomorphizing the computer. And then I'm going to add what's called a variable. And this variable is going to be a string variable. So I'm adding the little dollar sign to indicate to the computer that not only do I want this variable to be called x, we should know from algebra that we can store different values in x. But this variable is not going to contain numbers. It's going to contain a string of characters. And now I'm going to, on line 10, instead of printing hello computer, I'm going to print the value of x. So now we have changed our program. If we look at the whole thing, we clear the screen, we ask the computer for some input with the input command, ask the user for, the computer asks us for input with the input command, asking what do you want me to say. We're going to store that in the variable x string, and then we're going to print the value of x string, and then on line 20, we go back to 10 and again print the value of x string forever. So what do we want me to say? Let's say hello world, which is of course the modern introductory computer program. So there we go. Actually had an error, which went by rather quickly, but I'm pretty sure what happened is when I typed a comma, the computer has various conventions. And this is another thing to think about when we think about programming computers, that as we program, as we create our program, what we're trying to do, we're using language, a programming language, but language which is customized to try and remove as much ambiguity as possible. But when we do this, because computers can deal with ambiguity. So for example, if I use the word set, like set a value to a certain, set a variable to a certain value, computer needs that to be consistent, and I can't then say, okay, now grab me a set of dishes. It's like, it needs to be always a set needs to be always a verb if that's going to be part of our computer language, because the computer doesn't understand what, you know, the difference between the verb set and the noun set. So we're using these commands, their stylized language, that each element of the, each command has a single meaning to the computer. And there are certain conventions, and some of those conventions are, in this case, are specific to the programming language that we're using. And in this case, in TRS-80 Color Computer Basic, when you ask for input, if you add a comma, that will mess things up, because then it thinks that there is going to be another input. So if I run this again, and I try this again, what do you want me to say? If I just say, my name is Father Justin, then it will do that just fine and we'll do that forever. Obviously, the computer's name is not Father Dustin, mine is. But if I run this again and say again, hello, comma, world, then, oops, there was, I was trying to do this and it's not. Let's get rid of line 20 for a second. Run this and say hello world. Then it ignores the everything after the comma because in the convention of this particular programming language, the comma indicates that this is another input item, another thing that we want to type in and that should be stored in a different variable. And we've only asked it for one thing to store in one variable, that is x. So it's ignoring everything after the comma and saying and just saying hello. This brings up another point where I would say which illustrates the importance of knowing how computers work. Even down to the little quirks of how does this particular programming language work. Now again, this is not something that most people who are not programmers need to think about on any kind of everyday basis, but it is important to know in the sense that when we are learning to control computers, we have to figure out the quirks. And we've actually seen this with pretty much any application or program or piece of software that we've used. There are certain things that we have to learn to do as a user. So one particularly egregious example of having us as human beings having to modify our behavior and customize it to the convention of the computer system that we are working with was my mother, who's not a computer expert, having to learn, she used the Commodore 64s that were at her school, that when you wanted to look at the contents of the disk that you had just slipped into the computer, you had to type load and then the quote, dollar sign quote, comma, 8, comma, 1. This is a sequence of fairly arbitrary codes, which say mostly nothing to us as human beings, but which told that particular version of Commodore 64 BASIC to load the directory from the disk into memory and display it on the screen. Nowadays we have less of that. The goal of most programmers is to get us away from that, but knowing these quirks and the various little quirks of every computer system is something that we have to do as we are interacting with, and particularly as we are creating the world of code. So what does all this world of code stuff have to do with us? Why is this important if we're not particularly interested in technology other than just wanting to use it? Well, therein is perhaps our entry point into what we need to think about and reflect on, which is precisely that if we want to use technology, which is something that is required of us now in this world of code, we have to learn the quirks of the technology. We have to modify our behavior to some extent to do what the computer requires of us. I have a set of smart lights from IKEA that light up my studio here. In order to turn them on, there's a button that you press at the top and off a button that you press at the bottom. That's fairly intuitive. However, if you press to one side or another, that changes the color temperature of the bulb. And if you miss the up or down, you end up changing the color temperature. And if you don't understand how the system works, you might be confused as to why the lights seem to be a different color now than they were the last time you turned them on. And why aren't they turning off or on? Because I'm pressing the top, maybe just not the top, right part of the top of the button. So this technology, like all technologies that we as human beings use and introduce, changes the world in which we live and requires us to adapt and to change our behaviors. But I think what characterizes the world of code is that this is not simply introducing light switches that turn things off and on again instead of us having to get out whatever means of lighting fires and start lights that way. This is something that is pervasive across all aspects of our human life and existence and is requiring us very subtly to change our behaviors. And therefore, I think it's worth reflecting on. What is this world of code in which we now live? How is it changing us and our behaviors? And what are some examples that to consider? And what do those examples reveal about how the world of code in which we now move and live and breathe and have our being is changing us?